So today we took a little break from the continuity that you were practicing. From the continuity that you were studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, and stepped backwards, very fortunately, to the first canto. We're hearing here from Narada Muni is speaking with Vyasadeva. So this is a very, a super, super powerful part of the Bhagavatam. It's got the vitality of Srila Prabhupada's writing this before he comes to the West. Can picture that, he's writing in Vrindavan, he has no idea who will read this, who will hear this, who will be affected by this. And it also has the dynamics of being the beginning of the Bhagavatam, like the lotus feet of the Lord. It touches, these conversations touch to the Mahabharata and to other parts of the Vedavyasa's writings that introduce Krishna immediately. And then, after here, he will disappear again. Well, 9 cantos you have to study before you meet him again, correct?
Yes.
And then he will come back and he will display something quite different than what's being spoken of in the first canto. Because the first canto touches on Krishna's Mahabharata, and the 10th canto opens up on all of his pastimes in Vrindavan first, and then it proceeds on towards the later pastimes, which are perhaps much more commonly known to the average religious person in India. So the Bhagavatam is, first of all, a very mysterious transcendental literature, and therefore when we're reading and when we're approaching the Bhagavatam, we do so as far as possible in a prayerful mood. It gives us the greatest opportunity to have something that we hear or read stick with us for the rest of our life. And practically that is what we really need. So this is text 32, chapter 5, into 1. Etat samchu samsuchitam brahmams tapatrayat chiksitam Yadishvare Bhagavati Karma Brahman Nibhavatam. Itat Samsuchitam Brahman.
Itat Samsuchitam Brahman.
Dapatraya Chichiksitam.
Dapatraya Chichiksitam.
Yadishvare Bhagavati. Etat. This much. Samsuchitam. Decided by the learned. Brahman. O Brahmana Vyas. Tapo Traya.
Three kinds of miseries.
Chichitsitam. Remedial measures. Yat. What? Ishvare.
The Supreme Controller.
Bhagavati. Unto the personality of Godhead. Karma.
Once
prescribed
activities.
Brahmani. Unto the great.
Bhavitam.
Dedicated. This is Narada Muni speaking to Vyasadeva. So one thing that's really helpful, it's very, very helpful when you're listening to the Bhagavatam, is to keep it in context. Because that context allows you to become like the person who's being spoken to. But we forget the context, we're just reading a verse. And it may have a good philosophical point, and we like that verse,
Or we might find that the verse is a little bit irrelevant and we dismiss the value of it. But when you keep it in context, it's like a growing drama. It has taste, an emotional taste as well as philosophical, intellectual taste. So here we understand that Vyasadeva has done everything possible to do the right thing. And he's done the right thing on such an exalted level that he's compiled the Vedas for the people of Kali Yuga, because they will need this. Previously people could remember. Now I can't even remember what time I got up this morning. So now our memories are very clouded compared to what they used to be. And even great people with great memories are 1 in 1,000. Whereas previously, so many people could easily remember so much. So times have changed. So Vyasadeva saw this. He could penetrate into the difficulties that were coming up for the people during this Kali age. Because during this age, all of the virtues and gifts of mankind are being reduced. And simultaneously, all the vices and horrible things that you can imagine are being amplified and increased. And we face this. We face this on a daily, regular way. So Vyasadeva is feeling like, I've done all I can, and it's not enough, and I'm not satisfied. What can I do more? So if we think about our lives, in a moment when we feel that doubtfulness, I've done everything I can, it's not enough, is there any more? Then the words that are spoken of the Bhagavatam, they penetrate the heart in the same way as a dry sponge becomes full of water when you drip it on the top. And it holds the water, and it values the water because it needs the water in order to be able to clean. So similarly, our consciousness, we need Krishna's help in order to be able to do what we're meant to do in our lives properly. So here is what Narada Muni is saying. O Brahmana Vyasadeva, it is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and miseries is to dedicate one's activities to the service of the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, and in brackets, Sri Krishna. So please repeat. O Brahmana Vyasadeva, it is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and miseries is to dedicate one's activities to the service of the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So this is a lengthy purport. So what I have done, because it's such a powerful lengthy purport, is that I have gone onto the internet, onto the computer, and typed it out, entered into the database, and I made a copy of this so that it will give me an opportunity to study it more carefully. Because the book, Bhagavad, we don't want to screw on the book in any way or cause any disrespect to the Bhagavatam. So instead what I did is I copied it out, and now I can scribble all over it. Now, that doesn't mean scribble like the little children scribble, but it means that I can get in more deeply into the subject, because this is our essential food as devotees. And I know all the ladies, when they cook, they try to cook as nicely as possible. Or, if they're not a very good cook, they try to cook as carefully as possible. So similarly with the Bhagavatam, we have to understand this is our essential food. This is what makes us different from the people outside in the street. This is what makes us what we are, this message. And it is not only that we're supposed to give this message to others, which we are supposed to do, which is difficult, but we're supposed to imbibe deeply ourselves in our own lives. And if we do that, then we'll become very strong and safe in our Krishna consciousness. So the first part of this particular purport, Sri Narada Muni personally experienced that the most feasible and practical way to open the path of salvation or to get relief from all miseries of life is to hear submissively the transcendental activities of the Lord from the right and bona fide sources. This is the only remedial process. So this part of the purport I separated under the heading of hearing, the importance of hearing. The next is about these miseries of life. Srila Prabhupada is trying to reach out to all of us. And as I said, he's writing this in Vrindavan. He's not experiencing any miseries of life himself, but he's thinking of all the people all over the world who don't even know they're experiencing miseries of life. So he points out, the entire material existence is full of miseries. This is a very important point, right here. The entire material existence is full of miseries. Because on an individual basis, like myself, I'm sure that oftentimes you find miseries in your life. Miseries with your family situation, your work situation, your health situation, your own Krishna conscious faith. We find miseries, and sometimes we think, wow, something's wrong with me. You know, I better sort of keep my things to myself because I'm just so crazy. I'm so unhappy, I'm so confused, I'm so worried. I don't know what's going to happen with my children when they grow up. I don't know about this, I don't know about that. On and on, we can become quite anxious. So it helps us to understand that the whole thing is actually full of misery. Why? Why does it help us to understand that? It sounds worse. Can anyone think? True. But why does it help us to understand that the whole thing is full of misery?
Because we think we have here to endure.
Yes.
Help us to detach from the...
Yes. It helps us to detach. Thank you. It helps us not to try to think I can enjoy it. It helps us to detach. What else? Anything else? More personal to yourself.
And attached to Krishna,
of course. What it helps me to do is it helps me to understand I'm not crazy. And that takes half the pressure out of the difficult situation. Because when I'm thinking I'm crazy, I've got an extra load to carry alongside the miseries. So when I see the whole thing is miserable, then I have to actually try to understand how is it miserable? Because quite honestly, I look around when I go downtown, if you look at people's faces, at least half of them look happy. Right? And when you talk to them, those who talk to people, first they say, I'm great, right? I'm fine, everything's great, great, I've got a great life, I've got a fantastic job, my children are going to their school, everything's going well for me. And you think, oh, everything's not going well for me. So the Prophet goes on to say that foolish people, they're called foolish people, they have manufactured out of their tiny brains, many remedial measures for removing the threefold miseries. Well, we're also foolish people, so we don't need to figure out who's foolish. But this is the cleverness of the human being that he thinks, yes, it's miserable, but I can make this work. I can do this, I can do that, I can surmount this, I can get a better job, more happiness out of life. But Prabhupada points out, for removing the threefold miseries, as we've heard many times, pertaining to the body,
mind,
Yes? But first of all, stop and think for a moment, pertaining to the body. How does it feel when you get sick, or when you're sitting in one place and your legs feel stiff, or you've overexerted yourself and your muscles are tense? So there's the miseries of the body. Then there's the miseries of the mind. When I wake up in a bad mood, when I don't feel well, when I don't feel my mind is not fit, when I don't feel like being Krishna conscious, when I absolutely don't feel like going to the temple, when the last thing I want to do is to chant Hare Krishna. There's a misery there of the mind. Then pertaining to natural disturbances, we know that too. It's too hot, it's too cold. This thing is happening in the world, the water is being depleted, climate change. And what do? We've invented fans, we've invented heaters, we've invented fans and heaters together. So we can have that up on our wall, it can be this, it can be that. We're so clever, we counteract every difficulty that comes to us. But we don't realize that that doesn't nullify the fact that the difficulties are coming one after another. And with our brain, we figured out how to get rid of that one, this one, next one, this one, that one, that one, on and on, but they never stop coming. And then the third one is in relationship to other living entities. How many times you get your feelings hurt by the way someone says something to you, or that someone says something about you, or that somebody criticizes you when you certainly didn't mean what they said you meant. What to speak of so many other more violent means where other living entities can give you pain. What to speak of the tiny mosquito that can end your life with a threatening disease. So we're counteracting. We've got fly screens here in Australia, and we've got medical facilities here in Australia. We're an advanced country. Not like the poor people in Mumbai who have to have their poison sprayed all around their houses and close their windows because the poison will go into their lungs as well. The whole world is struggling very hard to exist out of these miseries. But men do not know, this is the people in general who we see and meet every day, they do not know that without the sanction of the Lord, no plan or remedial measure can actually bring about the desired peace and tranquility. The remedial measure to cure a patient by medical treatment is useless if it is not sanctioned by the Lord. The attempt to cross a river or the ocean by a suitable boat will fail if it is not sanctioned by the Lord. And parents' attempts to protect their children cannot succeed if it is not sanctioned by the Lord. Now this morning when I was reading this for preparation, a doubt came into my mind. I have to admit, when I read this, I felt like, that's not fair. Does that mean that, you know, this child here, he's anxious, you're all right, you, sorry, that something will happen to you, this one over here, or does that mean that he sanctions all the devoted children, he loves them all, they'll all be safe, they'll never have any difficulty, and all the people outside, he's not sanctioning them? Does that mean, so a lot of doubts came into my mind, is it a favoritism? Why does one other devotee suffer and I don't? Why does one devotee experience a car accident and lose their memory and another devotee has fine health? Is he sitting up there, as most people think, sort of crossing, cross. That might be a pretty nice tick. Does he do like that? And deep within the heart, of every conditioned soul is this real fear. It's a real fear. It's not a fear that I'm just imagining. This is the fear that disallows us to give ourselves wholeheartedly to Krishna and trust Him. And it's the fear that causes us to say, I better defend and protect myself as well. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not supposed to protect yourself. That's intelligent. But there's a core issue here that is in the heart of every jiva. Will he be enough for me? Or will he sanction me and my plans? Or might he just have me on the list of non-sanctions and then I'll fall through the hole in the floor, so I better not go too close? This is illogical. You can understand that my fear is illogical. But fears are usually illogical. But when we recognize the fear that I have, then we have a chance to correct it. So let us continue. Again, speaking about sanctioning. We should know for certain that the Lord is the ultimate sanctioning officer, and we must therefore dedicate our attempts to the mercy of the Lord for ultimate success. Now here Srila Prabhupada has written something interesting. He says we must dedicate our attempts to the mercy. We usually don't dedicate our attempts to mercy, we dedicate our attempts to the Lord. But he has written you should dedicate your attempt to the mercy of the Lord for ultimate success. So there's an element there that's included that's quite interesting. It's not this person who's sitting there ticking and crossing on behalf of everybody's names. There's a person there who has mercy. And our effort has to be to reach out to that mercy. This is, we must dedicate ourselves to the mercy of the Lord for ultimate success or to get rid of the obstacles. If we have obstacles, we dedicate also to get rid of obstacles on the path of success. So I have to admit this morning when I woke up with my big doubt, thinking about myself also, did I get a cross or a tick and what was going to happen? Then the first thing I had to do was to say, okay, so let's now chant. Let's try to accept the mercy of the Lord. Rather than not expect it, we should accept it, that He will be there for me. So let me work through this doubt, through this fear. Let me get to the other side. The Lord is all-pervading. Now listen to this list, because we've been told in this verse that all troubles and miseries will be removed by hearing. And we'll continue to hear in the next few verses about hearing about Krishna. So listen to what he is. This is very important. Be alert for this. He's all pervading. That means he's everywhere. He's all powerful. That means he's more powerful than the political parties at the current moment, or the belligerent country leaders who are trying to create war or profit for themselves. That means he's more powerful than Kali, the age of Kali itself. He's more powerful. He's omniscient. This means he's conscious of everything. He's conscious of everybody in this room at the same time, and everybody in the city of Melbourne. Every person. He doesn't say, I like devotees, I don't like non-devotees. He says, they're all my sons and daughters, they're all my parts and parcels, and he's conscious of every one of them. He's omnipresent. That means he's present here, he's conscious here, he's with us. He is the ultimate sanctioning agent of all good and bad effects. So now Prabhupada says what we should do. We should therefore learn to dedicate all our activities to the mercy of the Lord. There it is again. Dedicate to the mercy of the Lord. And accept Him. Now this is interesting. Please note, he says, we should accept Him either as impersonal Brahma, localized Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What a broad range he's giving. not only you should accept him in the deity form, which is the highest of these three, but you should just accept him. He's asking to be accepted, even as a spiritual energy in everything. It does not matter what one is. This is his next point. It doesn't matter what you are. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how stupid you are, how intelligent you are, how pious you are, how unregulated you are, how hopeless you are, how excellent you are. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you are. You must dedicate, one must dedicate everything in the service of the Lord. Now Prabhupada will give an example. If one is a learned scholar, a scientist, a philosopher, a poet, in other words, if one is a brainy person, then he should employ his learning to establish the supremacy of the Lord. There's a supreme personality of Godhead. Try to study the energy of the Lord in every sphere of life. Now, I must admit, I underlined this and circled it and put stars all around it. Try to study the energy of the Lord in every sphere of life. That's amazing. Try to see Krishna in every place that you are. When you're at work, when you're walking down the road, when you're with your family, when you're in a good mood, bad mood, whatever, try to study how Krishna is working through his energies. This is the most dynamic thing. This makes life so exciting that you almost want to jump up and down, and you feel so sorry for people who are not trying to study Krishna in his energies. Because we're all searchers on the spiritual path, but we may not be awake. We may be sleepy searchers. And then we're missing out on so much fun. You know, I was telling somebody that for me, spiritual life, it has to be fun. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. I'm not a dutiful person. So if you tell me it's my responsibility, that won't work for me. And this is true with many of the children. You tell me you have to do this, this is the way you do it, this is very important. Some very pious, special children will be obedient to that sense of duty. But the maximum amount of children will not. They will be interested in what's fun. So when you're having fun, then you naturally share with others, this is really fun. And even though at first they may say, this is not fun, it's boring. Then you say, no, look, watch this, it's so much fun. So if you want your children to grow up and accept the challenge of becoming a spiritually earnest person, then you must show them that Krishna consciousness is a great deal of fun. And then Prabhupada points out, this is also an interesting point, he says, do not decry him, do not criticize God, don't criticize him. Don't try to become like him, which is why I can't be God too. And don't try to take his position. All these three. Don't criticize him. Please don't criticize him. Please don't say that I'm God and you're God and we're all God. And please don't try and say I'm greater than him. Simply by, and listen to this, fragmental accumulation of knowledge. Fragmental. You know what a fragment is? It's an insignificant little piece. It's like, say, you have a piece of furniture and a little tiny piece of the wood comes off. You can kind of touch it up. Nobody will notice it's not there. But you know, you look at it and say, no, it was nicer when that piece was there. But it's a tiny thing, an insignificant thing. So we have to become so grounded that all the knowledge in the world, all the science in the world, all the information that comes to us daily, and all the information that is feeding the whole world and making it work in so many sophisticated ways, All the biotechnology and on and on and on, all of it is a fragmental accumulation of knowledge. It's almost insignificant compared to all-powerful, omnipresent, omniscient, and all-pervading. What do people really know compared to that? Nothing. Just a little bit of knowledge about how things work. But even they don't know who made it. Even they don't want to accept who made it because of their fragmental piece of knowledge. So we should recognize in ourselves that we must develop beyond that. Thank you for being so patient. Okay, so the next part is about supremacy. If one is an administrator, first Prabhupada speaks about if you're a learned person, then you should try to prove the point of that God is supreme. But if you're not a learned person, next step down, if you're an administrator, a statesman, a warrior, a politician, or we would say here, yes, a politician, a manager, a CEO, we've got the names for the highest positions in our society. We don't have warriors so much, they're there, but not so many. But if you have this management quality, then one should try to establish the Lord's supremacy in statesmanship. That means establishing it on a national level. And this will happen one day. We should understand this. It may not be today or tomorrow or even in our lifetimes, but one day this will come to be. Fight for the cause of the Lord as Arjuna did. In the beginning, Sri Arjuna, the great fighter, declined to fight. But when he was convinced by the Lord that the fighting was necessary, Sri Arjuna changed his decision and fought for his cause, the Lord's cause. Now he goes down to the next level, because this is Vanashram being analyzed here. So if one is a businessman, or he's an industrialist, or he's an agriculturalist, so we're covering everybody here, then one should spend his money for the cause of the Lord. And then Prabhupada tells us, think always that the money which is accumulated is the wealth of the Lord. And here's a great challenge. To think that the money in my pocket is not mine, it's the wealth of the Lord. Wealth is considered to be the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and Lord Narayan, or the husband, is the husband of Lakshmi. Try to engage Lakshmi in the service of Lord Narayan and you will be happy. And Prabhupada says, this is the way to realize the Lord in every sphere of life. Now he's going to take us up to the top, the very top, top, top. So he says, the best thing is, after all, to get relief from all material activities and engage oneself completely in hearing the pastimes, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This is at the very, very, very top. Now, you know, the top of Mount Everest, there's only a certain amount of people get up there. So for all the other people, what happens to them if they're not able to reach this point? Prabhupada encourages. But in the case of the absence of such an opportunity, either I can't do it, I don't want to do it, I have no time to do it, I'm obliged in so many ways, so I can't do it, I have the absence of the ability to reach the top of Mount Everest, then one should try to engage in the service of the Lord. Everything, listen to this, one should try to engage in the service of the Lord everything for which one has specific attraction. So this is also really important. It's a very personal process, Krishna consciousness. It's the process of each person turning inward and finding their way out of all the confusion of material life and back and restoring back the relationship which each person, even outside every person has, every living being has, to restore that relationship of love and trust and mutual happiness with the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada assures us of this. He says, this is the way of peace and prosperity, and this is the remedial measure for all the miseries. This is the solution to those miseries. Try it. Try it. It's not an overnight Panadol solution. It's a deep thing. It has to penetrate throughout our whole existence. But try it. Take it up, because it's yours. The word samsuchitam in this stanza is very significant. So then he gives us a final warning, and perhaps one that we don't need, but perhaps some people need. He says, one should not think for a moment that the realization of Narada, because Narada is speaking his own realization, was childish imagination only. So we tend not to think like that, because we have had an education from the mercy of the Bhagavatam already. It is not like that, Prabhupada says. It is so realized by the expert and erudite. Does anyone know what erudite means?
Learned.
It is so realized by the expert and erudite or learned scholars, and that is the real purpose of the word samsuchitam.
So samsuchitam. Samsuchitam
means decided by the learned. So this is, I went a lot further with my exploration of this verse, but our Bhagavatam class only lasts a certain amount of time. But it's such a fascinating subject matter. I will tell you one thing. Just as I was going to bed, I was thinking about how all the different acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and others, they're all speaking the Bhagavatam. In every subject that they speak, it's really just the Bhagavatam. And then I began to realize that everything, all our Krishna consciousness, the whole thing, is just the Bhagavatam. It's not just the class, it's not just the book, it's the lifestyle, it's the whole thing. So then I remembered when I was a much younger devotee, I was living in Gita Nagari at the time, when my daughter was just very small, and I was listening to a class, Srila Prabhupada, on a cassette, shows how old I was, and then I was playing this cassette, and it was in Seattle, Washington. And one lady asked Srila Prabhupada a question, and I just remembered part of it, and so I looked it up in volume. As soon as I put in the word, it was right there in front of me. So I felt like, this is a relationship going on here. This is meant to be spoken. So the question was about Joan of Arc. So I don't know if all those of Indian origin are as familiar with Joan of Arc as those who are from a Western education and Western culture. But Joan of Arc was a young woman in France, thinking many, many years ago, during the Hundred Years' War, which was a political war between France and England. And she lived in a village. She was a simple country girl. And she had these visitations, you could say, of saints. Now, this is not in the Vedas, right? This is not, in my mind, I'm going, let me think about this, because it's not Vedic. But she had the visitation of these saints, and the saints told her that you should go to war, you should dress as a man, because no one should see that you're a lady. If they see you're a lady, it would be very dangerous. You should dress as a man, you should fight on behalf of the French, and win France back for the king, who was a very weak man. Now, it sounds mildly like the Mahabharata, but very loosely religious. So she went to the person she was told, go to this man, he'll give you a horse, and he'll give you armor. So she went to the man, she presented her whole story, that the saints had told me to come to you and to give me a horse. He said, you can't, it's not possible. And he said, no, she said, no, you have to do this because the saints have said. So eventually he agreed, and he gave her a suit of armor and everything, and she had a horse, and she went off to the battle. And she was led by these voices that she had heard, and she was led to a great deal of success. However, there was a point at which she was captured. And when she was captured, she was brought before the Christian Catholic, what's called the Inquisition. The Inquisition means those who check whether what you're doing is bona fide or unbona fide. And by this time, they had taken off all her fighting things, and they had her dressed in her normal clothes, and they brought her in to examine her and see if she was crazy, or if she was a heretic. It means that she had some false religious idea, and what they meant to do with her. And so they tried her, and a big court case took place, a religious court case took place, and they eventually decided that actually she was a heretic. Because they couldn't sanction that she's a village girl hearing voices of saints and so forth. And so they finally they said, you have two choices. One choice is that you can go into a convent for the rest of your life, and out of the way where no one knows about you, like a prison, a religious prison situation, or we'll burn you. What would you do? She goes into the prison, she's admitting clearly that the voices that spoke to her were not real. If she accepts that the voices who spoke to her were real, they'll kill her right there. So she thinks this through, she has a deep experience and decides that actually the voices were real. I'm ready to die on behalf of these voices. So, would we do that? Honestly speaking, Prabhupada said this. And someone says to you, are you sure he said that? He said that, I'm going to kill you. You can say he didn't say it if you want, and we'll just sort of cut out your tongue and make sure you never heard of it again. But if he really did say it, I'll kill you. And what if there was a time like that? When to say I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, you had to go underground because they might kill you. Where's your faith? So she took the straight path and they burnt her at the stake, and many hundreds of years later, they recognized her, she's a saint. So two people in France, when this took place, they honor her very highly. But she's totally outside of the Vedic paradigm. And so when I became a devotee, anything outside the Vedic paradigm was sort of material. You know, this is Krishna consciousness, and that's something different. So that particular day, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada speaking, and this lady said, what about Joan of Arc? And as I remembered it from my poor memory, Prabhupada said, Joan of Arc is also Bhagavatam. And when I heard that long ago, I was like, really? That's very inclusive. So last night I decided to look it up, and I found out that it was much more interesting than what I remembered. The lady said, is there anyone similar to Joan of Arc in the Srimad Bhagavatam? That was her question. Is there anyone similar? Now, Prabhupada did hear originally, so he said yes, something, and then she said, is there any person in the Srimad Bhagavatam similar to her? Now, if it was you or me, no doubt, I would say, yes, Kunti Devi. I would find some personality from the all our texts, our sacred texts, and put that person forward to sort of push Joan of Arc a little bit out of her mind. Srila Prabhupada says, you want to see Joan of Arc in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Why don't you take, this is Srila Prabhupada's amazing ingenuity. He said, why don't you take Joan of Arc of the Srimad Bhagavatam? in the Bhagavatam, of the Bhagavatam. And then he said, any activities of devotees, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. Why do you, what do you mean by Bhagavatam? And then he went on, he said, Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam. This verse comes from Bhagavan. Bhagavat, Bhagavad Sabda. The word is Bhagavat. And it pertains to Bhagavat, and Bhagavat can be expanded to any unlimited. Just imagine, we're doing Bhagavatam class, and for me, my first reaction, as I told you, a bit embarrassingly in the morning, was, oh, it was a very contracted one. And then when I read this, my mind opened up and I realized how powerful Krishna consciousness is. It can include everything, but it has to be for the satisfaction of Krishna. That's the criterion. So Prabhupada says, anything in relationship with God, that is Bhagavatam. So if, because he does not know Joan of Arc, he says, if Joan of Arc was in relationship with God, she is also Bhagavatam. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way. So this was an expansive class. I was trying to help you and myself to expand, because then we have so much room to grow. Sometimes we like to kind of contract and focus very tight, and that's there too, but also to expand. Otherwise we can't include the whole world. We will only be a small sect, a small group of people who have this wonderful opportunity and treasure. But Srila Prabhupada is anticipating giving it to the whole world. So this is how we can do it. Everything for which one has specific attraction should be dedicated to the service of the Lord. Thank you for being so patient. Okay, if anyone has any questions, please.
My name is John Kerr. I believe in your book. Please, you should be in this.
Baladevi Krishna Gandha Mata Goswami, yes. Baladevi Krishna, not so much for the living. He was in the Narada line, and he came to the conclusion that that the Gaudiya line was superior, and he took his shelter of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who is a great scholar. He wrote the Govinda Vasya, which is the commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam for called the Gaudiya line. And the other personality, Gandha Mata Goswami, anyone who has a phone has also got a Vaishnava calendar, so they can click on her name and read all about her. She's actually more well documented, perhaps, than almost anyone, because she ended up becoming the guru of the king of Puri. So to this day, they offer certain ceremonies daily on her behalf in Puri. Perhaps they've forgotten, but they're supposed to. So these are two great personalities who touch our lives today. And as we think about their qualities, we feel insignificant, like insignificant and worthless, and therefore very, very grateful and happy that Srila Prabhupada has picked us up and given us a life. Anything else? Yes.
In the last point, he said that we should be all inclusive and yes. Devoid of distinctions.
No, not devoid of distinctions. I'm reading what Prabhupada said, right? He says, you should expand the Bhagavatam in this way. So he said, so if Joan of Arc is in relationship with God, if, he's not saying she is, he's not removing distinctions. We don't remove distinctions, but we understand them more broadly and more carefully. If we remove all distinctions, then we have another kind of a problem. Yeah, continue.
So sometimes in order to make it all inclusive, it might also be subject to, like I'm putting it in context of if I want to bring someone to Krishna consciousness, instead of making like, you know, we are a different thing, you are a different thing.
But the problem is this, that when we're beginning on the path of Krishna consciousness, and beginning I don't mean like in years, 5 years, 10 years, I mean philosophically beginning, we first of all have to make a distinction. That's the beginning platform, there's three platforms. The first one is to make a distinction, because otherwise you will merge it all together. This is just saying we do make a distinction. But then, once we get a little more maturity, we understand, keep those distinctions in place, but we also can step beyond them, not neglecting them, but we can be more inclusive while keeping our distinctions in place. Because we need a big space for all people who can't follow those yet, but we must follow them very strictly. Otherwise, we'll be in that space of people who can't follow them yet, and we'll be ineffective.
In the Prabhupada's property, you first mentioned about four different varnas and how to engage them. Then after that, it's mentioned that above all of them, we always hear about the passage of Krishna. But why the Prabhupada emphasized this hearing could also just of chanting or other
persons
of
devotion service, why should we continue? Well, it's like saying, the question was simple, why did Prabhupada emphasize hearing over chanting, for example? Because nowadays chanting is very popular, and the reason that it is also a little fashionable, and the reason why chanting is so popular is because chanting can be engaged in by all kinds of people. They don't know what they're doing, but they're chanting, right? You know what I mean? You can go out on the street and chant, people will come, go like this, and they will benefit, because they don't require any qualification to chant. But when you want to become proficient in something, like if you want to become a doctor, you want to become anything, you've got to then go on a period of study of your subject, whatever it is. So then hearing becomes so essential. Because the average person chanting, but for a devotee you have to hear Krishna. Otherwise, how will you develop a relationship with him? He might know his characteristics. Right? If I want to know, for example, I want to know that the whole world is a miserable place, and it's here. I'll be thinking it's kind of a cute place, kind of fun, you know, it's got some new technology, and you know, it's not so bad. It's but if you hear, and then you have to challenge your mind, because as I told you myself, my mind was saying, well, I don't think everybody's unhappy, but I have to say, the Prabhupada is saying here that they're unhappy. In what context is he referring to them as being unhappy? And the point that he's saying is they're unhappy compared to who they really are. And this will come out in the next two verses as well. That you might say you have a relative degree of happiness. Devotees generally have a relative degree of happiness. But the problem is that we have a mind, you might have noticed. And so we can have many tracks. So one track is happy, and one track is miserable. One track wants to serve Krishna, another track is really interested in lots of things. And so we have to manage that. So how do we manage that on our mind? That's pretty hard. And so therefore, do you notice how many devotees come and how many stay? It's pretty hard. And especially if you don't connect that relationship with Krishna's mercy, if you don't connect with that, then it's all on my shoulders to do all of that. It's too hard. So then I drift back into something else. So hearing solidifies our concepts. We use the word intelligence so much. Buddhi is used everywhere to distinguish between intelligence. But your intelligence means the concepts that you hold on to. You know, like say, I really believe that I'm a woman. And you can ask me why. Then I can tell you why I believe that. because my fingers are like this, because my hair is like that, I can tell you all this. That's that the concept is I'm a woman. So if I'm not a woman, if I'm not my body, then I'm going to really have to figure out, I'm not my body, what am I? You see, so similarly, if you want to change the concept, most people, this is a very interesting subject, most people get as high as they can spiritually, they come to personalism automatically, they can't go any higher. Because it's like they can go up to the ceiling, but they can't go up to the room upstairs. Because there's no hole in the ceiling. So they'll float like balloons. They'll reach the roof here. So people can reach a personal spiritual understanding. It's not impossible for them. That's elevating them. But they can't come into the corridor. They can't go out in this informed grass door. Up the stairs. There's an amazing place upstairs in the serving prasad up there. Then with that information, you heard it. Somebody gave you that information, now you know what to do. You get upstairs and you're so happy taking prasadam up there. But you couldn't go by yourself, you had to be told where it was. So in so many practical ways, hearing is so important. So we don't, when we say hearing is about, this is something you have to accept as a Westerner, because I'm coming from the same background, is that in India if you say, Prahlad Maharaj is the best devotee. And Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj is the best devotee. You think, he's the best devotee. That makes sense. And he says, Guru Maharaj is the best devotee. And you go, hang on. The best means the very, very top. And then you'll say about five of them are the best devotee. And then you go, best means, because our English language says the best is the top one. One. You could have team, but he's not saying team, he's just quoting, this one's best, that one's best, you're excellent, you're the best in the class, you're the best in the class. He's saying, who's the best in the class here? So this language thing, that we use language and try to understand, we have to therefore go back and inquire and find out what's the best thing and why is it the best thing. And similarly, when we say hearing is the best thing, we don't mean that chanting is not the best thing. Yeah, that's important. Thank you. It's a very nice question. Thank you for being brave enough to put up your hand. Yes. Is it okay to write on the Bhagavatam if it helps you to understand? For some reason, I've never been able to write on the Bhagavatam. I've been able to write on the Bhagavad Gita because one time in Mumbai, I saw in Prabhupada's rooms there, there's a Bhagavad Gita that he was using for study purposes. And so he would write notes on the Bhagavad Gita. So I felt like, okay, even though I'm not carelessly. But for myself personally, I have not written on the Bhagavatam. I have sometimes pencil underlined, but I haven't written on it. You see, look at my notes. It's all scribble to underline something, to do something. So I haven't done that for the Bhagavatam. Yes. Thank you. Good question. Yes.
You mentioned from the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, try to study the energy of the Lord in every sphere of life.
Yes.
But then, just functioning in this world, and then you have so many challenges and difficulties, and so it's so easy to get carried away and not see Krishna's energy there.
Well, it's easy to see Krishna's energy, you're seeing it everywhere. It's hard to realize Krishna's energy, it's Krishna's energy. I think you go to work and you have to work on a computer. It's easy to see the computer is there. It's hard to see that that's Krishna's energy. So that's our work as devotees. This is our real work. And it can go on side by side with whatever else we're doing in our lives. We can go side by side with raising our family because it doesn't require us to sit down and think like this, but it requires us to become alert and to become thoughtful. And it's hard for people to become thoughtful when they think that the process of Krishna consciousness is one of memorization, you sometimes people think that the more verses I know, the more Krishna conscious I am. But actually, it's a question of being thoughtful. I'll tell a wonderful story of my son. When he was about 15 years of age, he was in Gurukul in Vrindavan. And he snuck into the Gurukul because it was illegal at that time. Cassette players, one cassette of Anoop Jalota singing bhajans. They were very strict, but he got this cassette. And he had to be allowed to play cassettes. Players, so he put the cassette into the cassette player, and he would play it over and over and over and over. He played that cassette until practically it broke. And one lady saw that he likes him in Jabota, one of the other mothers who's sympathetic. She said to me, "Why don't you get him more? He's only got one, why don't you get him more?" And I said, "He's having so much fun with one. Why would I get him more?" And as soon as he got more, he got all the more. He got more and more and more and more and more and more. But he didn't play them in the same way as he played that one. So we want to see like that Krishna's with me, he's with me. We want that same kind of intensity that he got from that cassette player. He didn't need more and more. Do you follow my point? You didn't need more and more. You don't need more and more Krishna consciousness. You need to hear it over and over and over. You need to become attracted to what you do know. And it will blossom. It will become more and more for you. So does that mean, am I saying you shouldn't come to class? No. But you'll come to class, or I'll come to class, and maybe I don't absorb very much. But still I have to come. But what I do need is I need those things that I have absorbed, that I do understand, that I do accept, that have moved me in some way. These are the most important things to each one of us as an individual. And then when you see the computer and the this and the that, which are all Krishna's energy, you need to return to the source of your inspiration to push forward your understanding. This is Krishna's, it's not mine. Or you need to fight with yourself and say, it's not mine, where did it come from? And keep asking, where did it come from? Be analytical. Where did the brain come from, who made it? Where did the pieces come from to create it? Where did the iron come from? Where did it come from? Where did Australia come from? Where did the world come from? Ask, 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 ask. And you find that you have to come back to somebody who created it all for us. And they won't come there, the scientists don't want to go there. So they will tell you how it was made, how it was made, how it was made, and look what else we're going to make. And then they'll tell you in the beginning something funny happened, you know, something black, or there's a hole, or all kinds of things, silly things, and then their consciousness suddenly came and then everything, I don't know, it's so silly what they tell. When it gets to that point, because they're trying to erase the cross out God. And that's the worst word that you can use. And avoid it in school, you face this. Don't use that word, otherwise no one will like you. But where did it come from? There's no real intelligent answer to that. So we say it came from the Supreme Person, the Supreme Architect, the Supreme Intelligence is behind everything. And if you can connect yourself with that supreme intelligence, you can be supremely fortunate. And you can give supreme fortune to others. So there's another way to connect to the energy. Ask those questions. Don't just memorize something. Ask as many questions. Have as many doubts as you like. But don't collect doubts to create disbelief. Examine doubts to correct them, to increase your faith, but recognize when you have a doubt and find out something more on that particular subject. Did you have a little more?
Another question.
Yes. Yes.
On the same point, you know, you mentioned that
trying to study the energy of the Lord in the sphere of life, say how we can make consciousness more exciting.
Yes.
If you could please elaborate more on that.
Well, you see, it's not the difference between being asleep. You know, when somebody goes into an operation, they give them an anesthetic, right? And then they're asleep. And so none of their faculties are working. They're like lifeless. But then there's a person who's full of life. You know, they have lots and lots of excitement about life. Children are often like that. They love to feel the weight of responsibilities. They laugh and play. They're light. So we as souls, not as bodies and minds, we are composed of happiness, bliss. We're composed of full capacity to understand everything. And we have an eternal aspect, an imperishable. So if you contact those three things, no one can kill me, no one can hurt me. I can understand everything. So, I'm fully happy all the time. Everything that happens to me is a form, another form of happiness. That's me. If you contact that understanding of yourself, you would be very happy. Right? Anyone would be. The problem is there's obstacles in the way. So Krishna, Prabhupada is saying, look to the mercy of Krishna to remove those obstacles. So one who is actually in that state of consciousness, and Srila Prabhupada was in that state of consciousness, he was simultaneously extremely responsible and dutiful and brave, and light like a child. And sometimes somebody said to him in Bombay, he had to fight so much to get the land there, he had so many threats and worries, and he would tell people, you know, I'm very worried about the situation in Bombay. And then later somebody said to him, oh, but you have to undergo so much difficulty. He said, there's no difficulty. Mm-hmm. And he said, there's no difficulty. I said, praying for Krishna, he wanted something. So he himself didn't carry the weight that we carry due to our misidentification. But that's fun. Yes? I think everyone does. Yes? No? Yeah? So we're trying to get through to there. We're trying to penetrate to there. But we can't do it alone. We need the mercy of Krishna to do that. And he loves his devotees, so he's trying. But it takes some time. It takes some time, it takes some earnestness, and now we have to do our part. And he's definitely will do his part. You still look quite confused. All right. So thank you very much, and thank you for your patience, and see you tomorrow. Have a good day.